Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
At our 670 of the Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, he's going to make Matt, it happen.
Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley, along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your texts, your voicemails, anything you got for us. That is exactly what we're doing today, so we're going to take all your questions from Twitter. We're going to take them from your text and voicemail line. And got a handful of voicemails to get to as well. Wanted to kick the show off and welcome into Locked On Bulls this week. Matt, how are you? We wanted to kick it off with Charles Barkley kind of sounding off on Dan Patrick this morning. But before we do that, Matt, how are you?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Happy to talk to you today, buddy. And yeah, we can get to Charles in a second. But I think what we actually have to kick the show off with today is that clowny fool of a video you posted that went viral yesterday on Twitter of MJ's reaction to Isaiah Thomas's walk-off conversation in The Last Dance with Campaign's greatest career performance in that half where he's rated threes. And it got so bumped up that it actually turned itself into a Bleacher Report notification, like a push notification. That is the dumbest thing I've ever seen, but clearly it resonated with people for some reason. So good for you, man. You went big time by making a Michael Jordan campaign video. I don't know. None of that sentence makes any sense to me.
It shouldn't. Honestly, for the Bulls fans to the diehards, they caught on to the layers of the joke inside of it too, considering the fact that that was the Bulls' first win last year. The Bulls started 0-3, and it was against MJ's Hornets too at home, which made it the greatest part of the whole entire video. But yeah, man, some really stupid stuff just goes viral, and some of the best work out there just gets untouched. You never know what's going to go viral on Twitter. But man, when I tell you I was tweaking out when I got that notification at first, for some reason I have Bulls notifications turned on for Bleacher Report, which I don't normally have any notifications turned on from anywhere other than like Woj on Twitter. When I saw that and I saw it pop up, I was like, am I going absolutely batshit insane right now? Did I just get quote tweeted or push alerted on my own tweet? So then sure enough, we got a bunch of tweets from that too to follow up. So it was, yeah, I'm glad people enjoyed it. I will just say this, there are second, third, fourth editions coming from The Last Dance, maybe not necessarily that scene, but I've got some others in the works and hopefully people will enjoy it. But yeah, it's wild what goes viral, and I guess people are just thirsty for any NBA content they can get today.
I don't think you can classify Campaign as NBA content, but other than that, yeah, I guess so.
And it batted free, got it back. Lifts it four, yeah. Goodness, are you kidding me? Cameron Payne, I'm telling you, he's having an out-of-body experience tonight. 7 of 11.
Oh, my goodness.
All of his field goals have been threes.
Wow.
You'd have told me Cameron Payne would made 7 threes in a game, I might have slapped you, Neil.
I love that. That is my favorite call of all time from Stacey King.
He might have slapped you, dude. Point guard of the future, Campaign. Somewhere, Gar Foreman saw that on like on his Twitter burner account and just smiled. He's like, see, I was right.
I wonder if Campaign's scootering around his house right now. Wonder if he's still got that scooter from when he came in on draft day, or not draft day, but media day in 2018, 2019. Oh, man. But hey, at least to give Campaign a little bit of fame and a little bit of social media buzz yesterday. But yeah, let's Let's transition to something else that I thought was, I agree with a lot, Matt, and this is coming from a younger viewer that didn't live through the 90s, but here's Charles Barkley on Dan Patrick earlier this morning talking about how he blames Reinsdorf over Jerry Krause as far as who deserves the most blame for breaking up that Bulls team.
We looked at Jerry Krause was the villain. And then it,
No, he wasn't.
No. He was portrayed as the villain because, you know, at the end, because he took it apart.
He didn't take that apart. Anybody think that's a fool? That thing was all orchestrated by Jerry Reinsdorf. The notion that that little man broke up the Bulls is asinine and absurd. Hey, listen, John, if you go back and look at it and use common sense, just use plain common sense. Jerry Reinsdorf broke up the Bulls because he didn't want to pay anybody. You think about this. He let Horace Grant grow because he became a free agent, didn't want to pay him. They probably won't talk about that in the documentary. That's why he left and went to Orlando. He only paid Michael the last 2 years.
Yeah.
When he had Michael at a bargain, he was happy. So he didn't want to pay Michael. He paid him those last 2 years. And he had Scotty under a great deal. That's the reason he broke up the Bulls, strictly because of money. But to try to make Jerry Krause to be the bad guy, I thought that was very disingenuous by Jerry Reinsdorf.
I agree. After I watched that documentary, those first two episodes, I came in on Monday and I said, why is it that Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, has no blood on his hands in this?
Well, because that's the way he is. He's the silent assassin. He's my man from that movie, The Professional. You come in and kill you, and you don't even know you're dead until it's over.
And Jerry Krause isn't around to defend himself. That was what, you know, he helped build that team. And then it felt like he was Yoko Ono, you know, blaming him for the breakup of the Beatles.
It doesn't even matter if he was around. Number one, rest in peace. But the notion that Jerry Krause broke up the Bulls, Dan, come on, man. If Jerry Reinsdorf wanted the Bulls to stay together, they would have stayed together.
Matt, what do you think about that? Because I tend to agree with everything Charles and Dan Patrick were saying there. Like, they're just saying straight facts. But, of course, everything that happened throughout those, what, decade-plus years that Jerry Krause was there, and then finally towards the end, so much other stuff and details that we're probably forgetting and passing over also need to be taken into account. But somebody who lived and died through all of this, what did you think about that?
Yeah, I think for the most part, the notes that Chuck struck were right on. It's not as simple as Krause is the villain. And even the director of the documentary, Jason Ayer, has said on his many interview appearances recently that's not the intent that he set out to as far as establish, okay, MJ is obviously the hero of this story, but does there have to be a villain? And is that villain Jerry Krause? The director of the doc himself says, no, that's not true. And you know, just I think last week when I was checking, talking to a different Chuck, your colleague at 670, Chuck Swirsky, he was saying, you know, I hate the fact that Jerry is not around to defend himself, because it's not that simple, and he gets a lot of blame and probably doesn't get as much credit as he deserves. And then as far as the breakup, I think Barkley is right in that Jerry let it happen. And it's not only about Jerry Reinsdorf not wanting to pay people the money they deserve, whether it be Phil Jackson being deservedly the highest paid coach in the league, or Michael and Scotty getting their fair share, but about the handoff label that we've always given the Reinsdorfs, Jerry and now his son Michael, that actually, in even if you look at what's going on in today's Bulls headlines, it took John Paxson going to Michael Reinsdorf to say, hey, I'm failing, we have to fix this, for Michael Reinsdorf to get off his butt and actually do something about
right.
it. It's the same thing, but just rewind 22 years, and it's a hands-off ownership group saying, well, there are, you know, there are squabbles and bickerings and ego fights going on everywhere, and I'm just going to sit back and let it happen. And the decision to be inactive and the decision to be hands off by Jerry Reinsdorf, when he could have theoretically fixed a lot of this and said, if we all want to keep this thing going, I, the chairman and owner of this organization, will step in and tell everyone to fall in line and make sure that people are happy with what they're being paid and people know their roles, and we all can keep trying to make this run. But I also believe that Chuck and those who think that it was as simple as Jerry Reinsdorf just needed to step in and pay people, or Jerry Reinsdorf needed to just step in and put down his foot and say, this is what we're going to do, is a little bit misleading, because I do think Phil Jackson was sick and tired of the whole thing and wanted to walk away. As much as MJ says, after the fact, you know, I think we have a right to defend our title and defend it until we lose it, that MJ at the time was tired and ready to walk away. Scotty, the damage had been done. The bridge had been burnt. And even though they gave him a big, you know, sum of money in the sign and trade sending him out of town, I think Scotty was ready to leave. Everybody talks after the fact about, oh, Jerry Krause broke up the dynasty. Charles is right to say that Jerry Reinsdorf is just as responsible, if not more so. But I still believe, from everything I've read and everything I've heard, that all parties involved were ready for it to be over.
I think that's really well put. I feel kind of the same way. I still question and wonder, and I feel like we haven't really gotten a clear answer, and every answer is a little bit different. But I've posed this question a lot over the last 2 weeks talking about these four episodes. Why is it, do you think, that Reinsdorf doesn't get as much blame from people in the majority? You know, it seems like a lot of it quickly goes to Krause. Does it go back to personality and Krause constantly being in the media and maybe more of a face than Reinsdorf was, and Reinsdorf being kind of the owner? So people don't necessarily pick on the owner as much as they would the more front-facing guy like the GM. Is that part of the reason why, or was it because there was more of a hostility in feud with Krause and some of the players and the coaches, as opposed to the players and the coaches with Reinsdorf?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's both of those things. Jerry Krause was a more front-facing person than Reinsdorf, who, again, hands off, you know, in the background, lets the people he tabs to run his organization. So Jerry Krause is the one that's out there in a media scrum saying this will be Phil Jackson's last season. Reinsdorf was a part of that decision with Phil and Krause, but Krause is the one out there talking about it. And Krause is the one being targeted by the most famous athlete of all time, Michael Jordan. Krause is the one being targeted by Phil Jackson when he's talking about this, irreparable divide that has presented itself and grown over the years, and Phil making it an us versus them situation, and the them is Krause. The them is necessarily ownership. The them is Krause, and the whole organization's win championships comment that Krause made. It's years of buildup of this is said, he said, she said stuff, and most of it is Krause is the one who said it. And because Krause also is this, he had the nickname the sleuth, and there's a reason for that. I think he did not do himself any favors the way he conducted himself. And because it's a more front-facing person who can be pointed at as the villain, then that's who the villain becomes. And again, especially when Michael Jordan, the most beloved athlete in the city at the time, and maybe ever, right there alongside Walter Payton, is saying, Jerry Krause, F Jerry Krause, let's all make fun of the guy that I nicknamed Crumbs. Who is going to be labeled as the villain from a media perspective and from the fan base perspective nationwide and worldwide? We're going to take MJ's side because he's MJ. And if MJ tells everyone Krause is the villain, then Krause becomes the villain. But I also think there's another element to it that is you can't go, it's kind of like the thing about, if you come at the king, you best not miss, that quote from The Wire.
Right.
Jerry Reinsdorf is the owner of two sports franchises. And you can say what you want about players. You could say what you want about coaches. In some certain instances, you can even say what you want about management. But nobody is allowed to say anything bad about ownership.
The notion that that little man broke up the Bulls is asinine and absurd.
Chuck Barkley always speaking facts. I saw this on Twitter really quick, Matt, and then we will get to the voicemails and text messages we have, which you guys can drop those for us, 331-979-1369. This came from @DragonflyJones on Twitter, who's pretty prominent around NBA and just kind of tells stories and I always see him retweeted. He always has viral tweets, but this was one that went viral yesterday. It said, Chuck said he thought, speaking about Chuck Barkley, thought he was better than MJ. Not in a cliche, quote unquote, I think I'm better than everybody athlete way. He legitimately, in the most unbiased way he could, thought he was the better player. MJ went for 41 points per game when they met in the finals. Chuck said that's when he knew he wasn't. So I always think that's hilarious. You know, Chuck lives in his own world at sometimes, and it's just, I love that it took Michael scoring 41 points per game on national TV in the biggest stage of his life for Chuck Barkley to think, yeah, probably not the best player in the world anymore.
Yeah. I mean, like, Chuck always tells it like he's, you know, like he feels it, like he sees it. I think, you know, sometimes he's right, sometimes he's wrong. I did love his recent, you know, disses on Draymond Green. I guess Draymond Green is just really bored right now and running his mouth on a lot of different things. And, you know, we're getting a lot of, like, Dennis Rodman versus Draymond Green comparisons right now because of The Last Dance. And it's just, like, it's ridiculous.
Come on, like, man.
Chuck is a Hall of Famer. A Hall of Famer who didn't win a ring because he played in a very competitive era and, you know, was an MVP of the league and fell short against Jordan's Bulls in the finals. But, you know, Draymond is the third string, the fourth string of a historically great team. But you've seen what happens this year with no Clay and no Steph and KD leaves, what Draymond is on a team that doesn't have those other pieces. The Warriors are number one lottery bound team right now. So, like, for that kind of stuff, I love Barkley just calling it like he sees it, because sometimes Barkley talks and I'm like, Chuck, shut up.
Come on,
but sometimes,
man.
It's like his old, like, you know, old grumpy man sitting on his rocking chair and porch stuff is accurate. And it's accurate when he's telling people like Draymond Green, like, dude, shut up.
Come on, man. They probably won't talk about that in a documentary.
All right, before we get to our voicemails, and that's so true about Draymond Green too, it's ridiculous, but we don't have the time nor the need to spend that on Draymond Green right now. But there's something I do want to tell you guys about before we get to our voicemails, and that's the app called Blinkist. Let me tell you about my secret weapon for learning new things and getting ahead. It's hard to find the time to sit down to read and learn more. When you don't find the free time, or you can't read, or you're working on personal development, there's a place for that type of solution. There's an incredible app that's called Blinkist. It solves all your problems and solves this one specifically, and I highly recommend it. Again, that's Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need to know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. It's like the ultimate spark notes. Anybody in high school or college that has had a test that maybe you weren't so prepared for, or maybe you had to read 5 or 6 chapters of a book for a report and you didn't read it and you went to spark notes to kind of help you fill in those gaps. That's kind of what Blinkist does. But only 400 page books. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, while you exercise, you're staying at home quarantining, maybe your kids are virtually learning, you're getting a chance to break off for 15, 20 minutes. You can go there, learn something new, and use it right away. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had the time to. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. That's Blinkist.com/NBA to get your offer, an exclusive offer from the Locked On Podcast Network and Locked On Bulls here. Try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, Blinkist.com/NBA to unlock this free offer. That's 7 days free and saving 25% off your new subscription. Once again, Blinkist, Blinkist.com/NBA for your free offer. All right, Matt, let's hit these voicemails. First up is 617.
Hey, what's up, Jordan? What's up, Matt? Clayton from Boston calling in here. You know, the whole general manager search that's going on right now and the search for AK as well, when that was going on, kind of made me realize this thought of, you know, seeing the Bulls reaching out and requesting access to interview all these different guys, like, you know, Bobby Webster when they were searching for the president, or Michael Finley for the search for the GM. It made me think, you know, when was the last time any Chicago sports team has had another team reach out to them asking for permission to talk to their front office? Because, I mean, obviously we haven't heard anything about people wanting to interview Gar Forman for a VP job in the last decade. And also thinking about the Cubs, maybe there was something with Theo Epstein. I'm not as big of a baseball guy, though, personally. Haven't heard any rumblings of people wanting to hire away anyone on Ryan Pace's staff. And just got me thinking, I legitimately have no idea when the last time a Chicago team has had someone in the front office that other teams were trying to pry away from them. So just wanted to see if that was something that maybe you guys had the answer to, or something we could discuss on the pod. So I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Matt, before I give you my answer, which I think Clayton's going to be very surprised by this answer, but I do have one for you. But can you think of anybody of across the five major teams here in Chicago? And he does bring up a good point. We have a GM, obviously, so this was a little bit late in terms of our voicemails of using it, but I thought it was a good point posing. Not a lot of organizations in Chicago historically have had other teams reaching out requesting to pull their coaches or their GMs or front office members away, but can you think of anybody recently?
Well, the one that comes to mind as a coach, not an executive, and it's former Bears defensive coordinator Vic Fangio, who, you know, brought True. The Bears defense back to not just respectability, but one of the best defenses in the league, and finally got his opportunity to go become a first-time head coach with the Denver Broncos. That's the one I think of recently when I talk about a Chicago coach or executive who did such a solid job in Chicago that they got poached away to a promotion with a different team. Now, I know that Jim Boylan, when he was still an associate head coach of the Bulls did grant permission to, I want to say, Charlotte or maybe Orlando to interview him a couple years ago, and that interview didn't actually go anywhere.
But, you're right.
I don't know. What were you thinking of?
That's exactly what I was thinking of. Was Jim Boylan getting permission, the Bulls granting permission for the Hornets to interview him alongside a handful of other coaches, Fizdale, Messina, Jerry Stackhouse, and then James Borrego was actually the guy who ended up getting the job. But I remember hearing through the grapevines from, I don't remember who it was on the Bulls beat, but just got feedback after Boylan's interview and said it went historically wrong. Like, it was so far from what they were hoping to get out of a coach that they only had one quick interview with Boylan. So, but that's exactly what I was thinking of. Kind of funny and ironic that we're talking about, has anybody been requested of, and what would you know, it's Jim Boylan.
Of course it is. Yeah, and as far as, you know, our caller mentioning, you know, Gar, I think there's some possibility that Gar can find himself a different, you know, scouting job with one of these NBA teams. It's certainly possible. I know Bulls fans would even maybe scoff at the notion that he could get that job. I think he won't ever get an executive job again because of some of the things that have been said about him and maybe some trust issues as far as how he conducts himself and his lines of communication. But I did think it was funny that we got news earlier today that the Knicks are keeping their GM despite the handover of power to former agent Leon Rose, who's now running the show. And that I thought, you know, maybe Gar thought he could have a chance to get that Knicks GM job because they're one of the few teams that have been so poorly mismanaged, worse, more so than the Bulls in past years. But no luck for Gar on that front.
Gar is absolutely safe, yes.
Let's get to another voicemail real quick, Matt. I think this is one that we've answered multiple times, but still wanted to hit on it again just because there's been a lot of questions with the coaching situation. We also have to talk about something with Boylan, too, on a side note, but let's listen from the 773 real fast.
Hey, just had a question. Bulls hiring their assistant vice president of basketball ops. I was wondering if you think Becky Hammon would be from the Spurs would be like a reasonable option for head coach. It'll also make her the first woman head coach, so it'll be a very big milestone for the NBA. Do you think that's possible? Thanks.
Matt, I know we've touched on it multiple times. I'll say it like I've said it a million times. I don't think San Antonio is going to let Becky Hammon go anywhere because I feel like that's kind of a stepping stone. If San Antonio is going to be the team under Greg Popovich for as long as she has, it would just make sense to kind of promote her there. Seems like the organization loves her there as well. And for the Bulls situation, I mean, to me, if they're going to keep anybody around, Karen Stack, Umloff's assistant coach for the Bulls right now, and it would seem like promoting her within, knowing her, having longtime ties with the Bulls organization as well, and being a coach there, I feel like there would be an opportunity there to promote her, maybe not necessarily to head coach, but keep her around as opposed to going outside for maybe somebody like Becky Hammon. But I think she's staying in San Antonio until further notice.
I would be very surprised if the Spurs let her go. As much talk has been around Tim Duncan and his addition to that staff, you know, as an assistant under Pop this past season, and maybe, oh, could Duncan become the guy who finally takes the reins away from Greg Popovich? I think that as much as Tim Duncan, if he wants, could have a very bright future as a coach in this league, I think it's Becky Hammon's job. You know, she's been on the bench a lot longer. She's got more experience, and I think she certainly has respect to not only Popovich, but that entire organization. I think it's, I think it's just kind of a fool's dream for Bulls fans to think right now that they might be able to lure her away. I think maybe whatever slim chances they had might have been increased marginally now that there is a new regime in town and that there is a fresh look, and hopefully the Bulls are on the big important first step towards fixing a lot of things and bringing this organization back to prominence and respectability. But I even think that won't change that likelihood of prying her away from San Antonio that much. As far as the coaching search, we're still kind of in a holding pattern. You know, nothing's been said about Jim Boylan. He clearly still feels that his job is very safe. Like I saw yesterday that Callie was on your station 670 at some point and said that for what he's heard, Boylan would be, quote, blindsided if he got fired, which I think is hilarious. But, you know, it's not like Jim Boylan would go out there and say, yeah, I'm expecting to be fired any day now. Like, why would he say that?
You're right.
But the name that keeps coming up from every direction is Adrian Griffin, who has passed with the Bulls not only as a player in some of the tough 2000s days, but also as an assistant coach for all of Tom Thibodeau's years at the helm, and has gone on to have success as an assistant in many other organizations. And there's a lot of smoke around his name right now. And then the other one that I think is interesting that we haven't talked about yet, but it came up in Darnell Mayberry's latest for The Athletic, is Ime Udoka, the former player who spent some time playing with who? Greg Popovich in San Antonio, and has now been on the Sixers staff, obviously has a connection there with the new GM, Mark Eversley. So, again, I think people are just kind of speculating right now as far as what names make sense, assuming that, AK and his crew do want to bring in a new coach. But I think it's still, it's going to be a while before we find out.
I'm with you on that too. Udoka is interesting. He's kind of like a journeyman too, as far as a player playing, I don't know, what was it, 12 years across a handful of different leagues, whether it be here in the United States, in the NBA, or overseas. Like you had mentioned too, being a coach.
Also a Nigerian national team too.
Yes, very true. Looks like he's won bronze medal in 2005 for Algeria in African Championships, and in 2011. Like you said, represented the Nigerian basketball team. But 7 years as an assistant on the Spurs staff, and then now recently with the 76ers. He was also somebody involved in getting an interview with the Charlotte Hornets, speaking of him, when Boylan got an interview 2 years ago with the Hornets too. So interesting. Keep that name in mind.
The other thing, I was just doing a quick little, background research on him. Personal life. Do you know who he's married to and has a kid with?
I do not.
The actress Nia Long, who played Lisa in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh,
and also
really?
Was in a bunch of movies, including like Friday, Boys in the Hood. Like, that actress is Udoka's wife. How crazy is that?
That's awesome. That is awesome. What I was going to say, though, on Boylan front, are you buying any of the scuttle that we had a couple of days ago, maybe at the start of the week, was it Monday, about Boylan having some of the front office duties being taken over by him as Gar was like sent to NBA Siberia and just being able to scout for the entire year? Are you buying any of that, or you think that's a little bit overblown?
I laughed my ass off when I read that. So there's your answer. I mean, it's to me, I picture it like when a parent gives their kid a chore, but it's actually not anything important. It's just like, hey, like, you know, sort these plastic cups in this cabinet or something. Like it's not like give a toddler a quote unquote job so that toddler feels like they're helping. You know, help me bake this batch of cookies. I'm actually going to bake the batch of cookies and you're just going to stand here and kind of get in my way a little bit, but we're going to feel like you're helping. That is the only way in which I can conceive Jim Boylan being given quote unquote managerial duties on top of his coaching duties. Because, I mean, even as the Bulls have been reeling here and recognizing their mistakes and understanding that they, you know, the Jim Boylan double down backfired on them. Why would they give him those responsibilities when the guy can't even manage his timeouts? Like what? Like none of that makes any sense.
I'm not going to dispute you on that. You're right.
I just had to laugh at it too. I was laughing my ass off about it too. But yeah, I felt similarly. Like maybe it's just some of the non-essential, I guess, work that still needed to be done while Gar was out scouting that they felt they could lean on Jim Boylan for. I don't know. But like, again, I said, and I said this a year ago, Matt, we talked about it a lot over the summer, was Paxson and Boylan have similar mindsets. It's like they have parallel thinking at some time. So I would understand why it seems like Reinsdorf trusts Boylan a lot. And to him, it would be a stab in the back if he turned around and fired him and came in and hired a different coach. But it seems like he's had trust in him all the way up to this point anyway. And same thing with Paxson. Paxson's been super loyal to him for over a year now. So if they were giving him duties like that, but I took it like you, it's like give your 9-year-old a 10-pound bag of sand and say, separate these grains of rice into piles of 100 and let me know when you're done. So like that's
right.
What I took it.
Or like as. when in that short stint of The Office, Creed becomes the regional manager and Pam gives him two pictures and is like, okay, corporate sent us these pictures and there are 7 differences and we need to find all of the 7 differences just to keep Creed busy instead of like burning down the office. And then it's a cut to Pam being like, it's the same picture. Like that is the Bulls giving Jim extra job responsibility.
Oh God. Jim Boylan's been taking a beating even with no games being played over the last almost 2 months now. So let's hit another voicemail. This one's from the 847.
What's up, guys? Just calling in with something that I noticed and a question for you. So Bleacher Report has been releasing all these redrafts, NBA redrafts recently, and the thing that kept I kept on noticing was how many really great players were found in the second round of the draft. So it's just kind of running through, picking out like the most, the ones that really popped out, but like DeAndre Jordan and Chris Middleton, Jokic, Brogdon, Pat Bev, Patty Mills, Mark Gasol, Paul Millsap. I mean, like big time players found in the second round. And I know we've beaten the previous regime to death with the cash considerations and all that. And I want to move on past that and ask what you guys think of AK and what he is going to be doing in the future with the second round. I know that he's got a lot of contacts over in Europe, and a lot of those guys tend to become second-round draft picks. But I'm just curious if you guys have done any analysis of how deep he goes into the draft and if we can hopefully be expecting to be gaining second-round picks versus to actually be trading for second-round picks versus giving them away for nothing. So the guys that I listed off are just the most stellar ones that I could find, but there's other guys, you know, Hassan Whiteside, Parsons, my man Etuan Moore, Isaiah Thomas, solid NBA players that were all found pretty late in the draft. So just curious what you guys think. Love your show.
It's a very, 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 very good question and something that I think we've touched a little bit on, but not a whole ton, Matt. I don't know if you've been checking out these Bleacher Report redrafts, but I think it is interesting to even just go back and look at the drafts as recently as 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and think about where all these guys were selected and at the time what people were thinking and what actually ended up turning out and happening. But what would you say about the gold mine that AK seems like he's been able to find, and maybe even touch on a little bit on Mark Eversley over the last couple of years, seeing what the 76ers were able to do too. But again, man, I've pounded my fist on the table screaming about second picks for the last 3 years. And I've basically been told by a lot of people to fuck off. But then it turns out to be kind of true. I mean, look at even last year. The Bulls traded for the Grizzlies' second-round pick, and thanks again to Justin Holiday for those two picks. One turned into be Daniel Gafford, which has been a really nice surprise this season.
Yeah, I think Bulls fans were definitely getting sick of the not using second-round draft picks, not finding value or seeing value in second-round draft picks. And the one that obviously was the last straw that drove the fan base crazy was a few years ago when they trade the rights to that pick to Golden State, who take Jordan Bell. And not necessarily because Bulls fans were so high on Jordan Bell. And, you know, even though that game when the Warriors come to Chicago is like the money symbol, you know, for cash considerations, is when he's actually lucky enough to get in the starting lineup that night during the start of the Warriors intros. But like, it was because of the reason that they gave us, which was, well, we didn't have anyone on our board. It's like, how the fuck can you not have anyone on your board? You're a major market team, and this is the NBA goddamn draft. How do you not have anyone on your board? At what was the pick? It was like 40 or something around there. So, or no, it was 38, right?
Correct.
So that was the part that was like, the fan base was like, really? You don't have anyone on your board at 38 that you thought was worth taking a chance on, and you'd rather have the $3.5 million, just fed into the narrative that the fan base thinks that this organization is cheap. So I understand that frustration, and I hope that AK is going to change some of that. I don't think that it's like it's always going to be a gold mine in the second round, and a lot of second round draft picks turn out to be what many expect them to be, which is, you know, a flyer that doesn't pan out. For every second round draft pick that hits and turns into maybe not even a star player in this league, but a quality role player in this league, there are 20 or 30 who play a few games or a season and don't amount to anything. So those odds are still those odds. But as you mentioned, hey, look what Daniel Gafford looks like after his rookie year. And, you know, our caller mentioned AK and some of his international ties and the fingers he has and all these different international scouting. And when it comes to second round picks, our caller listed off a long list of second round guys who turned out to be stars in this league. The one he didn't mention, Nikola Jokic, like a legit borderline MVP candidate, all NBA guy who AK was like, yep. So I think Bulls fans can look forward to a brighter future when it comes to finding value with those second round picks.
I would 100% agree. And I would say if you're looking for some type of theme of what AK is going to do with those second round picks, it doesn't seem like he trades second round picks, at least historically. He hasn't had the full say in everything, but historically, I'm just looking over the 4 or 5 years he was with the Nuggets. Actually, I should say 6 years. He was with the Nuggets, and then the 3 years he had full control. It seemingly had full control. He took Jared Vanderbilt at 41 in 2018. Took Thomas Welsh from UCLA with the 58th pick in 2018. That ended up getting traded to Golden State. But he took Bol Bol last year from Oregon at number 44. And so there's some people that are still in the league, some guys that are still in the league that are making moves that have come out of the second round. And I think it's become more, I guess, more consistent as the talent grows and the competitive level gets higher and higher, you start to find value in the second round that some people may not otherwise see. And the Bulls have been very good at doing that too. So if they are going to keep some of their scouts around, which it kind of sounds like they are, the Bulls can only strengthen their weapon in being able to find diamonds in the rough. And we already know the kind of the history, even some of the present history the Bulls have had of being able to do that and having some success with it. So I would say they're going to probably stay around the second round picks that the Bulls do still have. And we'll see. But I would say majority are probably going to come from international projects. That seems like the way that AK likes to go.
Yeah. And I would say, just for a quick note on the flip side, I don't think that Bulls fans can assume that we'll never again hear the words the Bulls have traded their second round pick, you know, insert ear here, because the old regime is gone. Because sometimes it makes sense still to use that asset for a trade that benefits your organization. And looking at the incoming versus outgoing picks that the Denver Nuggets have, as we record this in April of 2020, they have their own first round and incoming Rockets first round pick in the 2020 draft. They have their own first round pick in pretty much every year on deck for the next like 5 or 6 years. But when it comes to second round picks, they owe their 2020 second round pick to Brooklyn. They owe their 2021 second round pick to Philly. They owe a 2021 second round pick to Golden State. And more of the same in 2022. They owe their second round pick to Minnesota with an option on swapping that with Philly involved. So they clearly, like the Nuggets, have made moves recently where they felt it was okay to surrender a future second round pick. It's just all about making the right choice. To me, it's not about you can't trade second round picks or, you know, you have to trade second round. It's just being smart with it. Just like any transaction, anything that your organization does, it's just about being smart and making the right move. So, clearly based on the track record and the incoming versus outgoing picks the Nuggets have right now, AK in the right circumstances is willing to surrender those second round picks. But he also, I think, will do a much better job at finding potential gems with those picks than the past regime did.
Totally agree. And I think that's going to give him more lenience too, as far as what he actually wants to do with those picks, as opposed to maybe Reinsdorf peeking in and saying, hey, save me $3.5 million by selling this pick. You guys haven't had any type of success over the last couple of years. So let's just pocket some money. Maybe he'll actually be able to have a little bit more leniency, whether it's to take that pick and draft somebody and work on a project, or it is to upgrade the roster. That's the good thing, Matt. You highlighted it the best. In 2018, he sent out two picks in the summer in order to kind of upgrade the Nuggets roster. And so I don't blame him for that either. So we'll see. The only good news is they won't be selling it for money. It'll be to upgrade the roster or work on a project, which both, I think, in Bulls' instance, benefit them. So let's take a couple texts real quick before we get out of here. If you want to hit us up, 331-979-1369. We're going to take some more voicemails and text messages, I think, on Thursday or Friday's episode in part in one of the segments. So it's still time to get in this week because we do have plenty of stuff to get to. But this text from the 630 from Zach, it says, hey, Matt and Jordan, great podcast. I listened during my hour commutes. I went to say thank you on how much you've been talking about COVID-19 and telling listeners to stay home and stay safe. I work in a public health department and your message has been great. Also, if you're willing to promote local restaurants, my dad owns Grandma's Table in Montgomery, Aurora, Illinois, and has been taking delivery and takeout orders during this stay-at-home order. Wanted to ask you, what do you guys think The Last Dance will do, anything good or bad for free agency? Will Jerry turn players away, or will the legacy draw a superstar back in? That coming from Zach. Zach, thank you for being a listener, and thank you for working throughout this entire pandemic. I know it kind of hits close to home for me, too. My brother is a firefighter, and he's an EMT, so he's still working throughout all of this, too. So appreciate everybody out there. And if you're in the Montgomery, Aurora, Illinois area, hit up Grandma's Table. Definitely hit up Grandma's Table. We'll tweet out a link to their website as well as their phone number to hit them up. But yeah, continue supporting local restaurants, local businesses around the area, because they are suffering just as much as everybody else is. So if you got a little bit of extra change in your pocket, don't feel like making lunch or dinner, hit up Grandma's Table in Montgomery, Aurora, Illinois.
Absolutely. All right, Jordan, here's a text from the 570. as a Bulls fan, I feel the Pistons weren't wrong for walking off after getting swept, and I don't hold it against them. Keep in mind, one day prior to this, Jordan tells the media that the Pistons are bad for the NBA and bad champions. If you're on the other side, how do you take that? I see this as a direct response from the Pistons team to MJ's comments. As back-to-back champs, they are entitled to exit any way they'd like. Keep in mind, Jordan at this point won nothing. I didn't know Vinnie Goodwill was a frequenter of our text line. Wow, that's interesting. actually, that came to us from David in Virginia. He brings up, I think, the one legitimate piece of defense for the way the Pistons handled themselves because of what MJ said, and that maybe that hurt their feelings. But MJ was not alone in thinking that. MJ was the golden boy of the NBA. The NBA wanted MJ to win. They didn't want the Pistons. The Pistons were the rejects, and that's why I think the city of Detroit embraced, loved them so much, is that they were all rejects, but they embraced that title and were very close-knit. And they were not just a bunch of thugs. They were a very good basketball team. That was a deep team. When you talk about the starting lineup and even, you know, Vinny the Microwave Johnson and all the other role players on that team, some of whom had second life with the Bulls. You know, Sally was on the second three-peat. Old James Edwards was on the second three-peat. But the whole thing about, they were right to walk off because of what MJ said. Look, man, sportsmanship is sportsmanship. And the Bulls didn't. The Bulls didn't owe the Pistons the sportsmanship of shaking hands the three previous years when the Pistons knocked them out because of the way the Pistons conducted themselves on the court. But MJ said in the doc, as much as it hurt him, as much as he hated it, he still shook hands after all those playoff exits at the hands of the Pistons because it's the right thing to do sportsmanship-wise. I've heard every different twisted explanation from Thomas, who went on Chicago Sports Talk Radio again earlier this week, to offer it up. And it changes every time. And it's just like the video you shared and not actually about campaign, but MJ saying, hey man, like you could show me whatever you want me. You can, you know, have me listen to any soundbite from Isaiah Thomas that you want. I know what they did and they know what they did.
It is funny to hear him say that because that's such a constant theme. Anybody that I've talked to that had like lived through all of this and understood it and remember all of these stories, it's like Isaiah Thomas's tune has changed quite a bit from all the stories that have come out, the backlash in the media, and now he's kind of rewriting his story. Jordan said the exact same thing, like you were saying in the documentary. He's like, I he knows what he said at that time. His tune has changed because of everything that has been published in the media and everything he's heard over the years. Now he's like, I don't care what he says, he's still an asshole. And then for Isaiah Thomas to go on Detroit radio, classic Isaiah Thomas move here, go on Detroit radio yesterday and say he was surprised to hear MJ call him an asshole. It's like, dude, are you serious? So, I mean, Bill Laimbeer, too, I think is kind of a wuss. He's going to go on every major publication, but he won't face people that actually want to talk to him about some of the things that he did or said around those times, and still to this day bash the Bulls. So the rivalry is there, and Laimbeer it's weird.
Is insufferable.
Yes, like he is.
Part of the reason that bad boys Pistons team ultimately fell apart, and obviously a big part of it was Isaiah Thomas and that injury that he just couldn't get over, which was a shame because, you know, IT's career ended earlier than it should have. But like Laimbeer and IT came to hate each other. Like, you know, Laimbeer did something that pissed off IT at practice. I think the story is part of the Bad Boys doc is that, like, you know, like Laimbeer set a screen or hit IT when he drove down the lane in a Pistons practice, whatever, and they got into a fight. It's like, dude, nobody, like, even, like, you know, his teammates could tolerate him when they were winning, but like nobody likes Bill Laimbeer. The guy's a douchebag.
And there's going to be people that listen to this too that aren't Bulls fans, but just kind of checking in and say, we're jock sniffers and we're only telling one side of the story. And that's the way that MJ portrayed it. And it's like, man, you're lucky you're getting these stories at all. And that's the type of power and influence you have. And that's what comes with being the greatest of all time and having that type of control, is you get to control the story. And that's what MJ knew this the entire time. And of course, they're not going to talk about some of the bads and the lows in this documentary. Like, you had to know that that was coming. He was going to tell every story and every bad part of the dynasty run and some of the negatives. Of course, he's not going to say that. He has control of everything. So you think he really wants to publish all of those stories? And even the things that he did allow in the documentary, he was still worried about before the first two episodes dropped. So to for anybody who's surprised about that and saying that it's kind of focused it through a lens of only one side of the story, come on, you had to knew that was coming.
Yeah, I think so. Jordan, let's end on this. 928 says, I'm not sure what Tibbs' status is right now, but if he's available this summer, would you guys be open to a return of Tibbs as the new head coach? Go Bulls, hashtag bye-bye Boylan. What?
Come on, man.
I read this text solely to use it as motivation to deliver a message to all of our listeners and Bulls fans everywhere. Stop living in the fucking past. We've been clamoring for change for years now. We're finally getting it. And it's still like, oh, bring Dean Rose back. Oh, bring Tom Thibodeau back. I love Tibbs, Jordan. You know I love Tibbs. My Twitter avi right now is a picture of me and Tibbs from when I met him All-Star Weekend. I love the man. He's my hero. But no. No, 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 no. Move forward, not backward.
Come on, man.
I'm with you. We touched on it last week or 2 weeks ago when it was like trending twice in a week in Illinois where it's just Thibs. So, yeah, let's move forward, not backwards. And I'm with you. I love Thibs too, and I hated when he got fired, and there's a lot of people here. But, yeah, like, let's try something different. We've been asking that for the longest time. Let's not pick and choose where we want to go back in history and bring back, because I feel like we still need to, and you know what? It's going to take some time for Bulls fans, for all of us to kind of learn how to do that fully, is not tend to want to grasp back to those early 2010s days and say, let's bring this guy back and try to recreate history, because it never works the second time. It really, really never works the second time. So with that, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Thank you to everybody who's dropped us questions, voicemails, anything on Twitter or on our text and voicemail line. You can hit us up on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. If you didn't get on the show today, promise you we're going to do another one of these either in the next 2 days, probably another 10, 15 minutes of voicemails and text messages, because there's still a lot of good questions we want to kind of get into and feel like you guys want to hear it too. But if you want to join into the conversation, again, 331-979-1369 or at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day, and thank you to our sponsor in Blinkist for sponsoring our show today. Hit up Blinkist.com, that's BLINKIST.com/NBA for 7 days free, 25% off your future subscription. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com